Hey everyone, it's Eddie Z here. I'm actually hijacking this week's episode. There's no Rolando or Nicole around. I just wanted to introduce my favorite episode of season one of Remakes, Reboots, and Revivals. That would be the Pet Sematary episode. I really love this story. I love the book, the 1989 movie, and the recent remake. Listen again, or listen to it for the first time. But remember, there's gonna be spoilers. I just want to let you guys know that we have not disappeared. We will be resurrecting in September. Season 2 will start out with the It remake, another Stephen King classic. I hope you guys enjoy it. Take care, and remember, stay unoriginal.
I don't even want to do that intro again. This is where I'll like say, okay, yeah, I dropped the recorder.
You're just gonna go
we
ahead.
Had to redo the first...
You just don't
minutes.
Want me to shame you during the episode.
I have no energy right now. I did this cute little like role play thing where Rolando and I were walking through the woods. Fred Gwynn approached us. He warned us about the path. And then we're like, let's just go and visit this pet cemetery. And
I just want to say that cute is subjective.
Oh my God. Eddie, Josh, did you enjoy it?
Just like our show, you know, you got to reboot it. And yeah. Then just start,
this is
start
true.
From again. Yeah.
I am remaking my own intro here.
You could say that the episode died, and now we're bringing it back to life by re-recording this episode, which is the theme of this week's episode, Pet Sematary. We are talking today about the 2019 version, and that's it. That's our intro right now.
2019 only?
Oh, that's right. And the 1989 version.
As you can tell, the resurrected versions are never as clear as great as the first ones.
Yeah, there's always something missing.
Yes.
There's something
off
about it.
Yeah.
For sure.
I'm Nicole.
And I'm Rolando.
And this is Remakes, Reboots, and Revivals.
An original podcast.
About unoriginality. Okay.
Let's do this again.
All right. Welcome, guys. Today, Rolando and I are joined by Eddie.
Hey, guys.
And we are welcoming back our dear, our beloved Josh.
Hey guys, I'm back after 3 months off. Yeah.
Yeah. Where were you all
yeah,
this
why,
time?
Yeah, why were you off?
So I was away because me and my wife just had a baby.
Hey.
In January,
hey.
Congratulations.
Which I think, you know, it's a good reason to be off for a few months.
I mean, you know, I heard women take maternity leave, not men taking paternity leave, but whatever.
Actually, I think depending on who you work for, some places do give you maternity
leave. Yeah, it's true.
Some places, but it's just here in America, it sucks.
It's 2019, Rolando. Get with it. Like,
I feel like neither paternity leave or maternity leave should be given out because it's just like you chose to have a baby.
So like
you chose to bring a life to this world that we're living in right now. So it's just like, you know what?
It's on you.
Yeah, this is on you.
Yeah. Well, just you know, let's talk about parenting and how to be a good parent and how to not be a good parent. If you want to be a bad parent, you should watch Pet Sematary.
I don't know. That might be harsh.
I don't give a fuck. Okay. I had to watch both iterations of this and watch people make terrible decisions and ruin people's lives. That is bad parenting.
Did they ruin their lives or did they ruin their afterlife?
It depends on who we're talking about.
I think both iterations.
I think, but who are we talking about? Rachel? Yeah. Her life got fucking ruined because of him.
Okay. We're jumping right into it. So,
okay. So Pet Sematary, by the way. Is a Stephen King novel that came out in 1983. Did anyone here ever read it?
I read it.
Yeah, can you tell us about it?
The whole thing.
Oh, book report time. I mean, definitely, you know, like the movie, it takes place about the Creed family coming into their new town in Maine, moving into a new town in Maine, mm-hmm. and starting this new life. And they discover that in their backyard, there is a pet cemetery. Ooh. But there's something that seems to be behind the pet cemetery that really kind of causes all this supernatural horror that takes place for the rest of the book and as well as the films.
And Stephen King was prompted to write this book after an encounter he had. I think he was on vacation with his family and his youngest child, his son, almost got hit by a car or a truck.
Almost got hit by a truck. And so this novel plays almost like as a morbid fantasy of like what if he did get hit by the truck.
Yes. And also Stephen King has went on record saying it's one of the books of that he wrote himself that creeped him out.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. So let's now go to 1989.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the year that Driving Miss Daisy came out and won Best Picture at the Oscar. Holger Oh, okay. Sorry, that was terrible, Miss Daisy. But this is, we're in the age of 80s horror, and we're at the very end of it. You know, we're in the Freddy era, we're in the Jason era. Hellraiser came out a couple years before this. And so they decided, let's make a film adaptation of Pet Sematary. I don't want to be buried in a pet cemetery. Stephen King indeed wrote the screenplay for this, so he adapted his own book for the film. Mary Lambert, this was her second film. She directed it, so this film is directed by a woman. Her first film is called Siesta. If anyone out there knows this movie, Siesta, good for you. Mm-hmm. But she came from the world of music videos. Mm-hmm. I think she even directed a Ramones music video, or she knew them really well. But Stephen King's favorite band happened to be the Ramones, so she got them to make the song Pet Sematary for this film. And this film has, well, actually, I don't think I know the actors' names by heart.
Oh, I don't know the actor's name either. But,
yeah, they're not. No Eddie big Munster, name stars.
Not Eddie Munster.
Herman Munster.
Herman Munster.
Fred Gwynn plays Judd, yes. But yeah, so it also came out in April, 30 years ago.
Wow, yeah, that's so funny. So you think the production houses did that on purpose?
Maybe. I think April for Easter, it's a good time to release this film.
Of course, because it's a story about resurrection. Yes, and indeed. Easter is the holiday of resurrection. So
yeah.
Makes sense.
It does make sense.
It's like a morbid, messed up version, I guess.
Of Easter.
Yeah. Of Easter, yeah.
Were there any dead rabbits brought back to life?
No.
Were there in the Bible? Dead rabbits brought back to life?
No, the Pet Sematary.
Oh, and no, there were dead rats. Oh, no, but they weren't brought back to life.
It's a family of four, technically five. Father Lewis, wife Rachel. Count. Yes, she does. Wife Rachel. Cats and dogs always count.
Dogs count, not cats. Cats are like the assholes of the family.
I can tell who's the asshole in your family.
Bobby, obviously.
Lewis, the father. Rachel, the mother, and their two children, Ellie, who's about 8, and Gage, who's about 3, and their cat, who counts, called Church.
Church.
And Lewis is a doctor. He just got this new job as being a university doctor. And he moves his family to Maine in this beautiful, gorgeous house. And they have so much land, and they find out where that in the back of their land is a pet cemetery.
Yeah. So do you think they got a discount because there's a pet cemetery in their backyard?
I think they got scammed and they had no idea.
Yeah, because they also live like right on the fucking street where these trucks are just speeding by. Yeah. So
no other cars come, just trucks.
I'd be, you know, the housewife apparently doesn't know like where they're moving to, right? Because when she comes out of the car, she's just like, oh, it's beautiful.
Yeah.
And it's just like... As soon as those trucks are just zooming by, I'd be like, oh, we got ripped off. What are we doing here? We got to move out.
Like, Lewis, oh my God, seriously?
Yeah. You fucking idiot, Lewis. Why would you do this to us?
But yeah, so Lewis, one day while he's working, a student who is out jogging gets hit and is brought to him in emergency services. And unfortunately, Lewis cannot save him. And this man called Victor dies. But then Victor... becomes sort of this figure, and this is in the book, right, Eddie?
Yes.
Where he kind of lingers within his subconsciousness almost.
You know, the spirit, this harbinger, warning, trying to warn Dr. Creed of you know, don't do this. Whatever, there's things going to unfold, don't be part of this.
Yes.
Stay away from what's behind.
Because you don't want to be buried behind Pet Sematary. The remote.
So, yes. And then he befriends his neighbor, Judd, who is played by Fred Gwynn, who has a really weird accent.
He knows he's going to be buried at the Pet Sematary. Oh, yeah, that's right, guys. We have a dog. Not my dog, usually.
What's going on, Shep?
We have a... Is he dreaming? He's having nightmares. Too much talk about dead animals.
Something was, like triggering him. Yeah, maybe. And Judd warns, is she that raw? There's a lot of history on that road. You don't want to go near the Pet Sematary. Come on. I think I'm doing a great job here, and everyone's looking at me like, what are you doing?
I feel like the audience is listening, like, what are you doing?
This is where I put a soundbite, and you're going to hear the comparison. You're going to be like, wow, Nick, that was great.
Actually, yeah. Let's leave some space right here for that soundbite. Guys, you tell us what you think on our social media pages, which we will plug a little later, because we don't got time right now.
There's all the time crossing back and forth on that road. It's luck will run out.
Is she that rare? There's a lot of history on that road. So Judd befriends them, and he forms a very nice friendship with the family. So when Church is hit down by this truck that, you know, they got scammed on this house because trucks are flying by every 2 seconds, apparently, obviously the family will be devastated about this cat dying. So Judd leads Lewis to bury, not at the pet cemetery, Church, but at the cemetery down that path, down that road. I'm going to do it every time.
The pet cemetery down that, I just want to just, when he's talking about the pet cemetery down that path.
Well, he doesn't know that it's not a pet cemetery.
Because where he's burying Church is not the pet cemetery.
No, it's not.
It's the Micmac.
Yes. The Big Mac?
The Micmac.
I still think it should be a meal at McDonald's.
Yeah, where they like revive the regurgitated pigeon pieces.
So Judd leads him to a path where it's called Micmac, and later on in the film we find out that it is cursed land. It's an Indian burial ground, essentially, and whatever you put in that ground, it's a force, right?
I just want to say it's not Indian, it's Native American. Please,
we're talking in terms of 1989, the movie, okay? Like, let's not project our 2019 Indian, like, no fucking
big deal. That's when you know. It's so funny watching these old movies, some of the words they use. Indian. Yeah. Oh, that's considered offensive now.
It is, yeah. And yeah.
All right. Well, it's more like a First Nation people, because they deal with the part of the region of Canada going down to northern.
Oh, yeah, true.
So that land, they call it the Micmac. That's their land.
Oh.
So that's why it's referred to that way.
Oh, wow. Judd leads him there, and they bury Church. He doesn't really tell him until after Church comes back, in which Church, the cat, comes back. He doesn't die. He comes back from the dead. He's a different cat. Before that, Church was lovely, and now Church is hissing and all this shit at people.
I would argue that Church acts just like every cat acts. Dickish.
First of all, cats, respect cats' spaces, okay? That's all you gotta do. Like, just don't, like, assume that they want to be pet. Like,
that's true. Yeah. Yeah,
like, they have, like,
this falls on Lewis for getting scratched up. It's like, oh my god, you're alive. I'm gonna hug you.
And then, well, a lot falls on Lewis.
So, in the books, the animals come back as kind of, like, bad copies of themselves. They just come as like pets,
like
they come as like entities acting like what they think pets should act.
Like
a Xerox of a Xerox of a Xerox, almost, where it's just that they're going through the motions.
Whoa.
You know,
I'm gonna throw an SAT word out here. A simulacrum, you could say.
Oh. How John Baudry are. I love it.
Are you just going to say it and not explain what it
is? Yeah, I don't know what it is. We want to know what you're using.
I know what the
correctly.
Word is. I don't know what it means. No. Nicole, what is a simulacrum? Because we took the same course.
Well, so
it's a copy.
It's a whole, yeah, essentially. Like, it goes through all these stages of simulations, and then it forms into a simulacrum. So, like, Jesus on the cross at your local Catholic church is a simulacrum of the idea of who Jesus Christ is, right? It's, like, kind of like the idea of
And then
that.
The theory devolves into, like, there's a Disneyfication, for example. I did an art project once on it where it was like...
It's really... Guys, read Simulacrum and Simulation by Jean Baudrillard and inspired The Matrix and stuff. And like, read it a million times. We still don't kind of fully grasp it.
No, so if you get it, really, if you know what it is, feel free to email us and explain it to us. I'm talking to you, Professor.
That's so interesting that they act as... I would have liked that. But again, that's something that when you... Reading it is one thing, and then like, making it into a film, and then you see it and it's like this tangible thing almost, that it just doesn't, like, that impact is lost almost. So the cat just becomes a dick cat that's obviously been scarred too many times, but you'd be pissed off too if you were supposed to die and didn't.
Yeah, like, so. Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Okay, so in the books, do these animals, the afterlife, is it like a positive afterlife, or there's no
comedy? I don't think that's really
that's not part of it.
Because as you learn from the book, you know, later on in the book, as well as in the movies, it's not them that come back.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
So yes. They're just a vessel of something else.
Gotcha. It is, okay. Yes. And you're going against the natural order of things, you know?
So it's resurrection gone wrong. So it's not Jesus Christ. I got it. I just want to throw in that joke one there.
I know you're pushing it, but that, just to distinguish, this resurrection of Jesus is different in the sense of that is a resurrection without end.
Okay.
That is an eternal that keeps on living.
Okay.
Okay, that resurrection keeps on living. Things with what we call resurrection now, like Buffy, what we see in Pet Cemetery, they'll eventually die. You know, they'll eventually die.
Mm.
they'll live a life and then they'll die.
So it's slightly different.
Yeah. So the way like Lazarus was brought back from the dead, mm-hmm. it's not per se resurrection.
Yes.
Because Lazarus will continue his life and then die.
Yeah. At a later point. So I guess we should call it not resurrection.
I think there actually is a different
word. I mean, just people, I think in media and everywhere, we use that term.
Yeah, actually, we do. It's yeah.
Just like the Immaculate Conception, it's always misused.
Yes, true. Well, okay, so unfortunately, after they realize that this can happen, a tragedy ensues upon this family. The youngest child, Gage. You know, if the foreshadowing of the trucks passing by every 2 fucking seconds didn't tell you that one of the children were going to get killed, then you need to watch more movies. But so Gage gets killed by a truck.
Yeah, because the parents didn't put up a fence.
Yeah. And they just let him roam free, knowing that trucks.
That's not true. They didn't let him roam free. He was trying to catch a kite. They were playing. They weren't like careless parents who were just like letting him. It's just like, go, child, be free in the fields. They were playing, and he was catching a kite. I don't know I forgot what Lewis was doing that. Like, he not lost interest in his son, but I think he was paying attention to something else. Something else caught his interest. Yeah, and then like Gage goes running out into the
street. But he was a careless parent, knowing that he darn well resurrected using it wrong, but his cat came back to life and he let the cat stay. Like, that's just bad. Now you know you're playing with fire and you're going to continue doing it. Like, okay, then you should burn. No pun intended.
But also at the same time, though, I don't know. So I don't think bringing back... He didn't know that he was bringing back the cat from the dead.
He buried the cat.
He didn't know he was bringing the cat back, though, to life.
But he knew what happened and then he let the cat stay?
Well, yeah, but what are you going to do? You're going to kill the cat? Like, it just came back from the dead. It's just like, well, I can't kill you now. Like,
I would do that. Yes, I would do that. This is what the whole film is about, and like I'm judging him, and but then of course we wouldn't have a film if he didn't do anything.
Yeah, but
he
did.
There'd be no story.
He's hoping, you know,
yeah,
that things will be okay. He's hoping that this will fix itself somehow.
And this is why hope is a dangerous thing.
You guys are horrible.
No, I agree. Hope is dangerous, but I feel like it's not. It's dangerous. I think it's dangerous, but I don't think it's like a bad thing though.
It depends what your ideology is, I guess, right?
What?
What you're hoping, like...
What you're hoping for? No, yeah. I think you could be hopeful for things to happen and turn out well, but, like, to just solely rely on a hope, that's where the fault lies.
So I agree. All right. But it depends about what it is, too, what you're hoping in. Because, like, the cat is just the beginning of what... beginning understanding of relationship.
Yeah.
What it is to be part of a family, what is relationship to things, what an animal like a pet means to us, what it means to the family.
Mm-hmm.
Also thinking of his daughter. I love my daughter. I want her to be happy.
Grief,
I don't want to, you know, I don't want the kids to suffer knowing that they lost their pet. So these are all the things that play out. And remember, grief is the main thing here.
Yes.
You know, it's the theme here. It's how we deal with grief, how we process grief, and how we hope. Either we hope that our loved ones are in a better place,
mm-hmm.
or we play the role like, how did they die? Like, could have done something, you know, what if I done this?
Yeah. An important element is that Rachel and her youth, her sister
Zelda
had
spinal meningitis, which I actually don't think it presents the way it does in the movie.
I think that both iterations of Zelda's illness were highly exaggerated.
Oh yeah, yeah.
But Rachel was essentially left there when her sister died, and the sister's illness and their relationship dynamic had a deep psychological impact
mm-hmm.
on Rachel, which made her approach grief and death in a very unfortunate and unhealthy way. And that's a big factor too, because other than the fact that I love that the filmmaker decided to make a grown man play her sister, it just adds this whole creepy factor.
Oh, that was
to
a
it.
Man?
That was a man.
Oh, I didn't know that was a man.
Yeah. And of course, they go really like headfirst with the camp factor on that. And what it is to be almost like a not true version of yourself. To see someone who you know, but like it's not quite them. Which also plays in when the quote-unquote resurrection factor.
What's Lewis? Did you remember how Lewis responds to like her telling the story? Does anyone remember?
No, I don't remember.
Okay, so Lewis is just like, it's just like, oh, I hate your parents more for like, what's it called? For letting her die with you. And I'm going to give you a Valium. You're taking, and she's just like, oh no, I don't need one. And he's just like, you're taking a Valium.
Really?
And then he walks out. I'm just like, what the fuck is that? That's how they handled everything, I assume, in the 80s. Just drug them. You know, like, I laugh so hard.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. I'm laughing now.
It's so funny because I remember reading that too in the book, like her taking a Valium to calm down for her to go to sleep. And I was just thinking, this is an option? Yeah. Being as a teenager, I'm like, this is great.
Whenever I'm upset, I can take Valium.
Take a Valium so you can calm down. It's like being all the anxiety of real life.
Yeah. Gage gets hit by a truck. We have to go back to that. And Lewis decides, because he is so grief-stricken and his family is torn apart and they'll never be the same again, to his hope is that maybe this time, or maybe in general, Gage can come back and they could be a happy family again.
Despite the fact that Judd had warned him that bringing back a human,
sometimes
they come back
better.
Like zombies, basically.
Yeah, he tells this whole story about how after World War II, I think it was, and this one man that buried his son, Timmy.
Mm-hmm.
And then when Timmy came back, like, he also, like, knew things. Like, he's downright telling you that, like, he wasn't the same person. He was almost like a demon.
A zombie.
But, like, knew things that he shouldn't have, like, had, like, otherworldly knowledge. Yeah. And Lewis doesn't care because he's so upset. And when Gage comes back, and this is, this is, again, a factor where from book to screen, from reading it to seeing it, it loses so much impact. The Gage stuff, it just doesn't work. You know, it's 1989 and they had limitations. And also, how do you show a possessed empty shell of a 3-year-old boy? That is a task within itself to visually show. So I'm going to be lenient on the filmmakers.
I just saw this movie for the first time yesterday, right?
Uh-huh.
I enjoyed it. I actually didn't, you know, I think I was just like enthralled by the story. So I'm not as focused on like how silly it is to see this little child try to play a demon, because he was so fucking adorable too.
That's so like, interesting.
Even when he's dying, like when they injected the morphine to kill him off, his father does, and he's like, not fair, and he goes to the corner and then he like trips on himself. Oh, like he's God. drunk.
I think Mary Lambert just like to the camera just following this kid around, and they must give him like fucking a little bit of some booze and just like, I'm gonna film this and see what happens, and this kid is just stumbling around. It's so great. He's so adorable.
He's
though.
Very cute. Yeah.
And then like the other part that was also ridiculous in the movie is like when Rachel returns home and sees him for the first time as an undead, and he's wearing like a top hat, a dress, and like a cane.
Mm-hmm.
And like her reaction is just like, oh my God, Gage, you're here. And then like he kills her, obviously. I will also say that they handle a lot of the death scenes very tastefully by not showing them all.
Yeah.
Not like the exception being Judd. Judd, they kind of went graphic there.
Yeah.
They sliced his mouth and then he bit into his throat. Sexy. Oh, and then they also always slice the Achilles tendon.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God. There's nothing more terrifying than the fucking Achilles tendon being cut.
And you're just going down.
God. It's so gross.
Yeah. It's interesting though, you said that it didn't bother you because you were so enthralled by the story, because I think that's such an important part of the story that it can't help but take me out in a way. The hope and the love that you have for this child to be there, and then when they aren't, and when you realize, or I don't even know if Lewis ever truly realized the horrifying thing and the consequences of what he did, but like you didn't feel that impact, like because of the limitations that you have. I mean, I don't even know as a filmmaker if I can. That's why in the new one they made the differences that they did. But I don't even know if you can truly show this and have it be accurate and actually respond to. And that's why it had to go into a camp factor, because it's like, okay, we can't actually show what this would be like. Like an innocent young thing who has been brought back for parents' selfish own reasons, and like how that would be.
To my knowledge in the book, and Eddie, you could correct me if I'm wrong, but in the book, right, Gage, once he's like the little demon thing, he's like talking like English properly, not like the kid actor.
Yeah.
Cursing up a storm. In the movie, I disagree with you. I think it didn't, I feel like it didn't take me out of the story, because maybe because the film itself wasn't as scary and horrific as it was. I kind of just took this all as kind of just like, the part that I thought was campy was actually Pascal showing up everywhere and intervening with Rachel.
Yeah, that was
to get her home.
Yeah.
That was campy stuff.
Yeah.
Gage as a child murdering his family and murdering Judd, trying to kill his dad and looking like Chucky. That I actually, that for me, that was like less it took me out by no means. Yeah, he was adorable, but I was still very much wrapped up in the story about this kid coming back to life and like the fucking nightmare that he is has brought upon this family at the this because of the decision that Lewis made by himself.
Yes.
Right? Not even consulting his wife, which is, I think is important for both stories for sure. Despite the fact that Judd tried to, you know, stop him.
That's true.
And yeah, and then this movie also has a pretty dark ending.
Yeah. So, that poor wife is victimized her entire life by her parents and then by her husband, and then she gets killed by her own son, who she didn't even know was brought back from the dead. And then, of course, what happens? Her husband decides to bury her in Mi'kmaq.
Yes.
And she comes back. And in the book, from what I know, they imply, you know, he's just like so caught up in his grief and all of his terrible decision making that he really, really hopes with Rachel that it would work. And they just like, she puts her hand on his shoulder and then she says, darling, and that's how the book ends, I think. But in the movie, it implies that she kills him.
Oh, in the movie, yeah, basically.
I mean, his reasoning is that it's, I'm burying her close to her death point. So it's like, yeah. She's still fresh, so to speak. She's still fresh. She just died. So if I do it, she'll come back okay.
His reasoning in the moment, of course, like it's human and it's fragile and all this stuff. And it makes sense. And that's what the whole book is about. Like, hey, you know, like the natural order of things is for a reason. Don't fuck with it. You know, learn how to process grief. And, you know, hope sucks and is a dangerous thing. The son dying and not being able to really convene that in the film, I think was a issue that the 2019 filmmakers were aware of and decided to do something about. And I guess we could segue into 2019.
30 years later. And they made some major changes. And actually, before we actually start talking about the movie, I actually just want to say, so I've actually been actively avoiding trailers. But, you know, sometimes when we go to movies, you just can't avoid them. I think this movie did a disservice in the trailer by kind of showing you who dies. I'm standing by that argument. I actually, because I had not seen the original Pet Sematary. So I had just seen the remake. I'm going into the old Pet Sematary and I'm expecting Ellie to die. Then Gage dies. I was just like, what the fuck? I was shocked. And I kind of wish if the trailer hadn't spoiled as to which child is one that gets hit by a truck in the trailer, I think I would have been more shocked actually going into the movie. But that's just it. I just want to talk about that.
So my counter argument when he mentioned that before was that I actually was glad that they let me know it was going to be it was going to be Ellie except of Gage. Just because when I originally found out that Pet Sematary is coming back, as a remake, I wasn't really interested in a beat-to-beat remake of it, you know, using the Gage character too. I wasn't interested I didn't want to see that again.
Yeah.
So to know that it was Ellie, I knew that somehow it was going to be fresh, something different. There's going to be a twist to this element that I was going to go there and not predict it all, but that I was going to see something new. So for someone who's read the book, seen the first movie, the trailer attracted me.
Are we remaking films because we want to see them? It's like approaching it differently. We're slightly variating it. Like, what if this happened instead and this? Like, it's still the same film, but we're going to do it a little bit this way. Or like, do we want to see the film beat by beat, just done differently, like Disney is doing? You know, so it's interesting that films are now going in different directions of like why they're being remade and how they approach it and like how it is we want to see. Because in this way, I think it kind of did actually work. So this one, okay, so it's very much the same stuff, same family. It's family of five.
They just
next door neighbor's
more.
Judd. Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, because...
And they updated for 2019, so they have iPhones, and they were able to look at stuff on the internet and stuff.
Yes.
So he was able to, like, Google search the history of where he buried that cat.
Right, exposition.
Yeah.
Which, we're going to Google to learn more.
But he should probably learn about his property on Google before he bought it.
Well, I don't think they tell you if, like, you're... I don't think they tell you if your property was an old burial ground.
Or if there's a pet cemetery there. Well, then that realtor, he didn't ask that realtor enough questions.
When
I got my apartment, I was like, any deaths, any reportings of hauntings?
Would that have stopped you?
First things I asked. Yes. Oh. I would never move into a place that at least had a recent death.
But don't you got a ghost in your apartment?
I definitely have a ghost at my workplace, but I digress there. Yeah.
Oh.
So here's a couple of things that they did differently. Stylistically, much darker. Like the first film is very bright almost. And you could tell like this film, I feel like, was shot with like they lit it and then they did it two stops darker. Like it overall has a very dark feel to it.
Okay.
They really put on thick the happy family shit. Like in all of the films, really. That like you're like, oh, this is a happy family that's going to soon be completely destroyed.
Yeah.
And it's a little too thick for me.
I'll say this. I'm gonna complain about the movie right from the beginning just mm-hmm. because it starts off with a flash forward.
Yeah, so
like
stupid.
A flash forward, it says like you see a burning house or garden or whatever, and then like blood stains everywhere, and it's just like I think that's such a cheap tactic
from
directors and screenwriters to use a flash forward. It's just like, oh, what happened here? Well, you're gonna have to sit and find out. It's just like, no, if you don't catch my interest from the very beginning, then like don't use this cheap tactic.
They had a lot of both films have a lot of unnecessary jump scares to try and like remind you that this is a horror film, so don't worry, it's gonna get scary. So here's a jump scare.
There are a lot of jump scares. I think. For me, these jump scares kind of worked. I'm usually complain about jump scares because I think they are a cheap tactic.
Yeah,
I think they were fine.
Don't jump scares almost always work, which is why they use them?
Yeah,
that's true.
It's a horror movie trope.
Okay. Yeah, maybe. All right. So
the point, Josh. The point.
I think the reason I like these jump scares, they tended to be more of the atmospheric kind of jump scares than necessarily like a boogeyman jump scare, with the exception being of the mirror gag with Zelda and Rachel.
Yeah.
That would be like the one gimmicky kind of jump scare that we've seen over and over again. But for the most part, a lot of the jump scares that I remember in this movie were like more atmospheric. For example, very early in the film, you have Rachel holding the baby and there's an immediate jump scare that's mostly sound, the truck zooming by her.
Yeah.
That was a good jump scare because it's just like, it's not a jump scare about something, it's not a jump scare that's like a boogeyman, it's a jump scare that's like just your setting.
Yeah.
Right? It kind of shows you the impending, I mean, you know, it's a little too on the nose because that's the truck that will eventually kill one of the kids, but it worked.
I think
jump scares are cheap tactics. I think they mostly worked here.
It was interesting because I always take notes when I watched a film, and I was reading my notes back today, and we are introduced to Judd in this film when Ellie goes to the pet cemetery, and then she like starts approaching what we later find out will be this version Micmac, and then Judd like comes and approaches her and says get down, and then they talk. And to me, the real horror film is an older man approaching a young girl in the woods and all that stuff. I was getting really bad vibes during that whole scene. I was like, oh my God.
I agree. I was a little too. But then he, you know, he gets the stinger out of her.
Yeah.
And I thought that was cute. I don't know. I'm a sucker for John Lithgow.
He's a great actor.
Yeah. So I'm not like, I didn't get those bad vibes. I'm like, it's John Lithgow.
I liked his version of Judd.
Yes, I did too.
He did not choose to do there's a lot of history on that road approach. He was very much himself, and he seemed more of a wounded man.
Yeah.
In this version, you know, which was nice, and he really like you could tell that this girl touched his heart, which he said, which creeped me out. Mm-hmm. But like that he really wanted to save her from any grief, and that he made this decision, and then he fucked up their lives.
Yeah, he was much more sympathetic, actually.
Yes.
This version than the 1989 version.
And in this version, he also, there's a young student that dies that then haunts him in his third eye about Pet Cemetery. In this version, though, it's the kid is black.
The only black person
in the whole movie.
He dies as soon as he's shown.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh my God.
And I'm like, oh, this is how they're trying to be all inclusive.
And then
they can't make the family that, so everybody else has to be white, so make Victor black.
So Pascal has like actually talking role in the original 19 Pascal? Pascal.
Pascal. Pascal.
Pascal.
Pascal.
Pascal. Pascal.
Sorry.
He actually has like a talking role, right? He becomes like a character despite how campy and corny it is. In this one, he's kind of just like grossly gory. Now this gore scared the shit out of me. It was gross.
It was gross,
disgusting.
Yeah.
It was tingly.
Mm-hmm.
It made me feel things, guys. Gross things. It was just so nasty, right? Like they had like you could see like his brain and you could see a pulse. It was just like it was so gnarly. And then they just keep bringing him back. So he not only see a black guy who's dead, but now he's also like the tropey magic black man.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I was not very comfortable with that. Because yeah. there was no... If you're going to make the whole family black,
mm-hmm.
or don't give me a black character at all. It's a Stephen King novel. To my knowledge, they don't usually revolve around black people. So I... Do you? How many Stephen King...
There's
like a list of
this
89 Stephen King movies. I don't think one of them had like a main black character.
Well, we can definitely... We're open to emails.
Out of the 89 Stephen King properties that have been adapted, I don't think I've ever seen one that had a
the
black...
The Green Mile?
Shit. I always forget the Green Mile. Oh, and the Shawshank Redemption. But they were like ancillary characters. They weren't the main characters. They were important to the story.
They were
magical.
They
weren't main characters. And they were also magical. Yeah. Thank you, Nicole. All right, that's it. That's my tangent on the black character in this movie.
Okay. So I did write that down, though, and I agreed with you. I was just like, oh my God, seriously, this is the route they're going to go. And you know, it's also just like pressure to be like, let's have representation and all this stuff. And it's like, you know what? I know why you're putting him there. So it's just like, fuck you. Okay. So in this version, like we said, the trailer showed it. So you must know that in this version, Gage does not die. Ellie dies. And... That was an overall good choice. One, because then when she comes back, the actress can actually play what she needs to play.
Yes.
And both films, you don't really get to know Gage because he's still a child. So you can't really have these scenes. So like having the child that talks more and has more of like that you get to know, it's more of an impactful loss.
Yes.
Like that when they buried her and stuff, just like I felt the grief and the pain of that, and that was really impactful because it's just like, yeah, like,
I agree,
that's devastating.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think the scene with the burial was for sure impactful, but I actually think the reason structurally it also worked was because I think it's much creepier for Gage to be seeing Pascal. Those scenes where Gage interacted with like this bloody corpse were much more creepier than the scenes Pascal interacting with Rachel and talking to Ellie.
Mm.
Although I don't think you ever saw Ellie on camera talk with Pascal, right? I think it was always just like...
Yeah, no.
Yeah. It was always just Rachel interacting, really. Not even. She wasn't... It was like him interacting with her and she would just like subconsciously hear it, I guess, or whatever, which was corny. This one, I think... So I think that one, structurally, that worked a lot better here.
I think so. I mean, I actually didn't really like the film up until that point. I thought the editing was terrible of this film in general. And
wait,
I
really
just
worse than the 1989 one? I think the 1989 one had some pretty bad editing.
Yeah, I think they're both really terrible.
I think this one, I don't know. I think this one, the editing was actually, I thought it was fine. I don't, what are you complaining about here?
When it's hard because like, to me, bad editing is simply like shot changes in Y and pacing. Like, and sometimes it's like, really, you cut to that angle, why? And then, like, I need to show you the film in order to really remember, but I just remember so many moments of those where I'm like, bad editing choice.
I don't know. I don't.
And sometimes it's in really simple scenes. Like, to me, like, good editing in, like, a really scary scene, okay, but, like, in the simple scenes, too, you should edit it well. Here I wrote, worst dad ever with bullet points. Don't follow a neighbor into the woods. Kill the cat, don't reanimate daughter, just like all like the list of like the stupid things that he should have done. Stay out of the forest, don't drug your neighbor, like all the things that he did.
Don't drug anybody.
It's true. Don't drug anybody.
But so Ellie dies, and so of course,
can we just go back though with Ellie?
Sure.
I really loved the portrayal of this character, like this actress, this little girl, just
she's
did a great
good.
Job. There was something like an old soul.
Yeah.
Inside this child.
I agree.
Oh, yeah.
And there was I automatically was just attracted, you know, to this character and felt for her.
Yeah.
And I think she's structurally great. There were some choices that this screenplay made that made more sense than the original one, right? And I'm talking about introducing her questions about what happens after death very early into the film.
Mm-hmm.
Like once she learns about a pet cemetery and things being buried there when they die, the questions start coming up in her head. It's like, well, what happens after death?
Yeah.
And then they automatically bring you in the two fighting forces where, thank you, to the ideologies. You have Lewis, who is a doctor and a scientist. He believes there's nothing after death,
mm-hmm.
right? That's the character they built here, which is different from the character that they built in 1989, who was a little more like not wishy-washy. He talked to his daughter like real parents would talk to their children, right?
Yeah.
It's just like, yeah, there's an athlete. You know, this happens. This Lewis spoke to his daughter like, I guess what we imagine doctors talk to their daughters like. It's just like, well, death happens and like there's nothing after that. And the mom, they introduced Zelda's storyline early on because, mm-hmm. you know, she has her own conflicts about talking about death, right? Yeah. She has her own fears. She has her own hangups. And it worked. I actually like that they introduced some of these elements early on because I think it tells a better story. However, I do think they overuse Zelda for too many jump scares. I think that's where they cheapened the movie. They could have actually lessened some of those scares. I like how they kind of interweave that. I like how they interweave Zelda more so into this movie than they did in the original one.
Yeah.
But I think they overutilized her too much to a fault. They did.
And then both, I think I like the 1989 portrayal of Zelda a little bit more because it's like, here's an old man playing her and she's really creepy. Whereas like, I was reminded of The Ring with Zelda and just like her overall body. And I'm like, why does she look like she was in a swamp? You know, like the choices they made and or like, but the one thing that I did like about this Zelda was hearing her.
Yes.
That was
the sound
best
design
part.
Actually in this movie is actually very, very good.
Yeah, that was a good choice.
Yeah.
But then the rest of it, yeah, I agree with the Zelda stuff. But yeah, and I think that their dynamic does work a little bit better in this film. Especially, I think, Rachel in this film and like her frame of mind and where she is on things and then why Lewis is tempted to do things not only for his family but for her,
mm-hmm.
you know, is makes more sense in yeah. this one. Also, when Church comes back, that great scene where she's like brushing him and like all his dead
skin.
Fucking body, like, yeah. is she like trying to go through.
And what is and wrong Lewis with had the opportunity. What is wrong with Ellie and Lewis, like, when they're combing? It's just like, you know what? If it's not giving and you're trying to get a tangle out, just wet True. It some more. Fuck
Although
it.
She's also a little girl and she doesn't know how to.
She has hair
in her life.
She's never brushed
no,
her
like
own hair.
But if I was a child and that happened, I wouldn't know how to process this or if it was bad.
You're
gonna
keep
to
yanking until the cat like scratches you.
Maybe.
No wonder that cat scratches. To be quite honest.
Yeah.
It's just
like stop
yo,
on my dead
stop
body.
Fucking up my hair, man.
So the this film is different because Ellie comes back. And she's fucked up. She like at first she's like, oh, this is what I remember. Why am I here? And then she starts showing that she is not Ellie and that she is someone else. And she kills Judd and all this
stuff.
So
I think they showed it too quickly. I kind of wish they would have had that a little more slower. The movie was what, an hour and 40, I think, or an hour and a half?
Hour and 40.
Okay, so they could have like, if they gave me like an extra 15 minutes to develop Ellie from like being, because she Ellie kind of goes from like kind of like to like blah. Like really quickly,
yeah.
In
that's
the movie,
true,
right? Like they're really fucking speeding up that last act.
Yeah,
I could think they could have slowed it down a little, and I think that would have had a little more impact. I think
they could have.
One of the great things that it's an older child that can communicate.
Oh yeah,
mm-hmm.
Made it better. Like when she starts asking, well. Like, "Oh, I died, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I was dead before."
This is the last thing I remember.
And
yeah.
and how creepy is the scene where he's combing her hair?
Yeah,
and then he
yeah.
sees the staples of how they put her head back together again.
Yeah,
oh, man, it is. That is a very nauseating scene, too. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, that was pretty crazy.
And then he hides it.
Yeah.
Yep. Don't want to see.
I think Suppressed. It's... But she's such a good actress.
She was a great actress.
She was able to play dead inside so fucking well.
Yeah, she was.
Creepy. Creepy, creepy child.
Yeah.
I also great. Actually... I also liked how Rachel, when she comes back from... Greco's, like, she went to stay with her parents, and then she's crying because, like, Gage has been talking about Pascal. And she's just like, why is he talking about Pascal? What does he know about Pascal?
Yeah.
So she's coming back home to, like, fucking yell at Lewis for not being with her, right? Because, you know, your child just died.
Yeah.
But you also had to sell the house. I understand why he stayed behind. So she comes back. And then, like, when she sees Ellie, like, I think her reaction made much more sense than Rachel's reaction to the 1989 movie.
Yeah.
Where 1989, Rachel's just like, Gage. She goes in for a hug and then, like, Gage kills her.
Mm-hmm.
This one, I love how Rachel was just like, you're not my fucking daughter.
Like,
this is
horrified.
A fucking abomination. I think Rachel might be the only character in this film that actually made logical sense.
Oh, no, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Her like, reaction was perfect.
Yeah, and she chose to save her baby first
mm-hmm.
instead of saving herself, right?
Yeah.
She did what I think, yeah, this Rachel really, really stayed true to what a mother is.
Yeah, no, for sure. I thought that was my favorite part.
And
I was
like,
yes,
I think
proper reaktion.
Heartbreaking when like Ellie's killing her.
Yeah,
and then she's
gut.
Just like, you know, she's fucking with her, right? And Ellie, you know, what's Rachel's reaction? It's like, you're not my fucking daughter.
Yeah, And like she knew.
And I was like, you go, Rachel, you go.
So everything's pretty much the same in terms of beat. The resurrected child kills the mother, mm-hmm. Rachel. But instead of him killing Ellie and the other versions burying Rachel and then hoping that things, they do something slightly different.
Yes.
Right before you think he's going to kill Ellie, you find out that indeed Ellie buried Rachel and that Rachel gets resurrected in like 5 seconds.
Yes.
And then she kills him and mm-hmm. then they bury him. And then the film ends with all three of them now back in these new weird demonics.
And the cat.
Entities with the cat. The cat's still around. Making cameo appearances, approach Gage, who they hid him in the, they locked him in the door, you know, when she was escaping from Ellie in the car. Yes, in the door, in the car. And they approach him and they ask him to unlock the door and to come out. And it is presumed that they will kill him. And now they're all going to be a family of demonic entities just like walking around. And they set it up perfectly for maybe a sequel.
Really? How can you make a sequel out of that?
Are you kidding me?
I don't. What, we're gonna follow the four undead?
Yeah, what, and also like, who's gonna move into that house, and they could be terrorized by this family. Like, there's so many things they could do it in. Pet Sematary 1 had a sequel.
I know.
So, what did you think about that when they did that whole twist? Now, of course, this was your first time seeing it, so you didn't know it was a twist.
No, I didn't know that that was a twist. I actually thought that was just the ending.
Mm.
I thought it was fine. Right? You guys are talking about sequels. I was actually also thinking about sequels. I was thinking it's just like, oh my god, this work has a great sitcom. Three undead family members and then the raising a live person. Three undead and a baby.
Yeah.
There you go.
And now back to my demented family. It's interesting. I kind of like the original just because of the implications within, like, you know, this. And like, this poor man just keeps making the same devastating choice over and over again. And just, he ruined his family's life. He's ruined his own life. And he's just still... And it shows how dangerous hope is. He's still hoping that everything will turn out. And like, just like the, you know, it's going to play over and over and over again.
Yeah. I think I agree with you. The 1989 film for sure had a better ending.
Yeah. Well, I actually kind of in this way prefer the book because the movie shows that he dies so that the cycle doesn't continue. This is where it ends. I like the book version where she just like places her hand on her shoulder, says, darling, but you know which way it's going to go. But I do also think that I really applaud the new one for taking this direction because I was not expecting it.
Mm-hmm.
And that it has its own further implications, albeit a little bit more not, it's not open-ended. And it's more like, and now they're a family of three demons and a baby, you know, or eventually kill him and resurrect him.
Three zombies and a baby.
Yeah. But I liked that they wanted to give us something new.
Yes.
And that they did it and they embraced it and it still did very much work. And then it's got this whole disturbing factor about that too.
Yeah.
So it worked.
I think so. I have a question for you guys though.
Yeah.
That is a hot topic question.
Okay.
For this film. Do you guys think that Judd had buried his wife in the pet cemetery?
Of course he did.
Okay. You're saying yes. Eddie? No. Okay. So it turns out that they left that ambiguous in purpose. Like, it's apparently a debate on Reddit that people are arguing about whether or not Judd had buried his wife.
Mm.
I actually am leaning with Nicole. I thought that it was when Ellie kind of takes a swarm into Judd's wife, he says, it's just like, oh, we're now burning in hell because of what you did.
Yep.
I think the implication there was, like, if you resurrect someone from the... from the dead, like, now they're automatically banished to hell.
And
which is fucked up because they had no choice in the matter. It should actually be Judd who should be going to hell, but whatever.
True. But her face, well, also, who knows if these, whoever Ellie is telling the truth. But the face changed.
Yeah. But
to his wife.
But the Wendigo, which is the entity that takes over, yeah. it's supposed to be an all-knowing, powerful figure. Okay. It's supposed to fuck with you. So I understand why the ambiguity was there. He could just be lying. He could just be trying to, like, you know, rile up Judd.
Yeah, I think so.
So I don't know
for sure.
But
all right, so did you enjoy the Pet Semataries?
I actually did. I enjoyed both Pet Semataries. I think they're both different. They're both actually very complementary of each other, right? I think there's some things that the remake does better,
mm-hmm.
and I think there's some things that the original does better, and I think
so too.
If you kind of, if in 30 years we get another Pet Sematary, if they take the best of both, they could make a really, really fucking great movie.
This is true.
Yeah.
I think that the material and the idea and, you know, the story is so rich that it's hard to do it wrong. But in some ways, they very much did do it wrong. But in some ways, they did it right. And I think that the dialogue that this story creates and the ideas that it throws at us is just like a lot of fun to have. And in terms of dialogue, we would love to hear what you guys think. Have you read the book? Have you seen any of the movies? Is this one of your favorite horror movies? Like, let us know. Reach out to us on social media. Tell them where they can tell us.
You can find us on Instagram. Our handle is Remakes, Reboots, Revivals. We're also on Facebook if you search for Remakes, Reboots, and Revivals. And you can also email us. Our email is remakesrebootsrevivals@gmail.com.
So many options.
So many options. And we love hearing from you guys.
Yeah.
Nicole, do we want to do a lightning round?
Let's do a quick one.
Let's go.
Pew, lightning round. Okay, so Lewis.
1989 Lewis, because he was so fucking hot. He was so fucking more attractive than the current Lewis. Who what's his name? Clark?
Jason Clark. Yeah.
Pass. Okay. Hard pass. He also could have moped better, I feel like.
True. They both really pissed me off. I was not you want to talk about character? Yeah. Oh.
I think I can relate more to 1989 Lewis a little better.
This is tough. I think I'll say 1989 Lewis.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My favorite scene with him is also when he gives us like a nice shirtless scene. He's going into the bathtub. You see legs. And then the cat.
See legs. Oh, he has legs.
Yeah. It's just like, ooh, so sexy. And then the cat comes in and fucking is like, fuck your bath. And throws a fucking dead rat in the fucking bathtub. Yeah. Oh, my God. It's so funny.
Rachel.
I'm going to go with the 2019 Rachel.
Me too, 100%.
Yeah.
She was great.
I was complaining about her haircut in 1989, but actually looking back, I love it. it's so of its time. She looked Madonna-ish at one point.
So 80s, yeah.
But yeah, no, 2019 Rachel for sure is the better character.
And Judd.
John Lithgow's Judd.
I mean, I really love the way Fred Gwynn did his job back down that route.
I want to know, do people understand what you're saying? Because I don't understand what you're saying.
Yeah, let us know. Can you understand me, guys? But overall, oof. I mean, for the camp factor and just for overall smile on my face every time you spoke, Fred Gwynn. But I think John Lithgow did really great.
Yeah, John Lithgow, really great. John Lithgow was good.
Yeah.
John Lithgow is usually very good. So
he's a great actor. So.
What else? Ellie.
I feel like there's no comparison. I mean, the second Ellie also just had more to shine, and they wrote the role better for her. So yeah. Obviously she was better.
I'm not going to lie. I like the 1989 Ellie, but because the performance for 2019 Ellie kind of calls for more, that was the better Ellie.
Yeah,
I agree. Yeah. Gage.
They both were really cute. The first one was a little cuter, but I guess the first one had a little bit more acting to do.
Yeah.
So I would say the first one.
Yeah, 1989. Gage. The demonic Gage, for me, wins. Those ridiculous costumes he was in at the end. Worth it. That's going to be the cover. It's going to be for the
two Gages?
It's going to be... I'll compare the two Gages, but it has to be Top Hat Gage.
Yes.
All right, cool. I think that's it.
That's it. That's all she wrote.
That's all she wrote on this. So we hope you like the episode.
Yeah. Cool.
Well, until next time,
stay unoriginal.